One of the biggest problems facing America's cities is creating affordable housing for people who work there. In many cities, the residents and government officials cringe when developers propose building multifamily housing in neighborhoods that have traditionally had only single-family homes. Daniel Parolik is an architect from Berkeley, California. He started a project called MissingMiddleHousing.com to try to help developers and regulators change the dialogue about the kind of housing that could be built in residential neighborhoods. It's an important conversation because millennials and empty nest baby boomers are putting a lot of pressure on urban environments to provide housing with a walkable downtown and amenities like restaurants, shops, and entertainment options.
So I think a lot of it has to do with this growing demand for walkable living. And the fact that AARP now has made it a priority to communicate the importance of walkable living to their constituents is a sign that this has become a very mainstream conversation, is an important one that every community, regardless of size or context, whether it's more urban or more rural, needs to be having right now.
Unfortunately, zoning laws and building codes haven't kept up with this kind of demand for walkable urban living. Since World War II, municipal governments have encouraged the growth of housing intended to fit a lifestyle that's disappearing, the so-called nuclear family of two parents and a couple of kids. But Parolik and other developers are trying to get regulators to realize that most households don't look very much like this anymore.
Over the course of the last 15 to 20 years, there have been dramatic shift in household demographics. And these, every time I present these shock me a little bit. So this idea of this 1950s nuclear family that so many communities and development communities and planning documents have still latched onto really doesn't exist anymore. Where there's very, very little of it, and it's becoming a smaller and much smaller percentage of the population. So in every community across the country, 30% of all households, and I was in Minneapolis last weekend, it was 40%, are single-person households. One person. Do you think that 30% of the housing that's being built in your market is directed toward a household with one person? Absolutely not. I mean, I can go on to Trulia, and it takes me about 5 minutes to figure out that this market's not being met in almost any city across the country. Some simple census data has showed that by 2025, 75 to 85% of households will not have children. So once again, this conversation that a lot of communities have, we need to be building housing for families. Yeah, that's important, but you need to acknowledge the fact that only 25% of the households actually have children. So we need to think about the other 75% of that population as well. Lastly, is by 2030, 1 in 5 Americans will be over the age of 65. So do you think we're building housing to meet that rapidly aging population, right? All of these different factors, and there's many more, but these are the foundation to make the point that we need to think very differently in terms of design, in terms of policy, in terms of zoning, in terms of development, about the way we think about and deliver housing in our communities.
Parolik helps developers design multifamily residential properties that fit with existing neighborhoods. He says increasing the availability of so-called missing middle housing in urban environments means getting planners and regulators to think differently about how space is used inside what used to be regarded as single-family housing.
It's a range of housing types that are house scale, or they're the scale that is very compatible with a house, but they happen to have multiple units inside of it. And these types, missing middle housing types, have existed, exist in every pre-1940s neighborhood, and especially in a place here like Philadelphia, where these missing middle types have really historically been a core of the DNA for a lot of the neighborhoods and smaller towns as well.
Many of the housing types that fit Parolik's definition of missing middle housing already exist in the Philadelphia market, but they're not being used in the way they were originally designed, or building codes prevent them from being repurposed in that way.
Yeah, it's quite surprising always to me, especially in a place here like Philadelphia that has such a strong history of these types, that very few of them have been built in the last 50 plus years, and that's why we call them missing. But it's there's a long list of reasons, starting with zoning codes, and we find that in our work we're usually brought in to assess barriers in a city zoning code. So there's very typically some very easy barriers to remove it within zoning codes. Condo liability, if a developer is trying to think about selling units that are stacked, there's additional liability for them, which makes it hard to do some of these types. It's a little bit more difficult to finance these.
Part of the problem in Philadelphia is high costs and low household incomes, according to Kevin Gillen. He's an economist and a senior research fellow at the Lindy Institute for Urban Innovation at Philadelphia's Drexel University.
Well, Philadelphia is unique among cities in that we have the highest poverty rate of any large city in the country, but also among the highest construction costs of any city in the country. So we have a very high cost of building housing, and it's for a low-income population that can't afford to cover that high cost of development. And so that's a big gap to traverse. And so financially, that just kills a lot of projects that would otherwise pencil out in other cities or municipalities.
Perolik says multifamily housing isn't easy to talk about in many communities.
Getting community support for a project that is not a single-family detached housing project is often a very complex conversation in a lot of communities. So building that community support is often challenging and is often a barrier for anything that's not single-family detached housing.
Gillen says the problem's not that simple to fix.
Well, yeah, on paper, let's raise incomes and lower development costs. raising incomes is certainly very challenging. It's a long-term problem. It's not something that can be resolved overnight. Our construction cost issue may have severe or important economic implications, but it really requires the political will to resolve it.
Just bringing millennials into the picture won't offer much help, according to Gillen. While they may have higher salaries or even two salaries for couples, they face other financial challenges in the competition for urban housing.
They are among the most economically challenged demographic cohort in the United States. They basically graduated college during the Great Recession. They are adjusting for inflation. They're lagging every other generation of where they should be at this point in life in terms of their wealth, their savings, their income. And on top of that, they tend to be relatively risk-averse and, to be honest, financially illiterate. I mean, they're distrustful of banks. They don't understand how mortgages work. Their credit scores are terrible. I hear from the realtors that when they do buy a home, they're accompanied by their mom and dad, not only because they need mom and dad's help with the money, they need mom and dad's help with the process.
Perolik says one possible answer is to encourage developers to trade thoughtful design for site density to temper objections from communities. Perolik and Gillen spoke to the Delaware Valley Smart Growth Alliance on Friday, October 12th in Philadelphia. You can read more about the program and purchase an audio podcast of the entire panel presentation at statebroadcastnews.com. This is Steve Lubetkin, State Broadcast News.